News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody, and being with us all week long. We are in D.C. in the beginning. We close out in New York. And the big focus is what's going on in the Power Center with the President of the United States, who's going to be in two places today, North Carolina, to see up close and personal the recovery that is way too slow from Helene. And let him know, I have not forgotten. Remember, he was first there with Franklin Graham after the disaster hit Florida and North Carolina. And then he's going to go out to California, where he had no intention of meeting with Governor Newsom. But Newsom says, I'm going to meet you on the tarmac. How awkward. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Mike Summers, the 15th chief executive of API, the American Petroleum Institute. The president said the new green is a scam. The new Green Deal is a scam. And he's going to drill, baby, drill. That affects his business. We'll talk to Mike about that. And Congressman Austin Pfluger, kind enough to invite me and Lawrence to the Texas Ball. We'll give you a review on that, which was fantastic. He's also a U.S. Air Force colonel. And we want to get his perspective on Pete Hegseth's about to be, I think, confirmed today. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I think Russia should want to make a deal. Maybe they want to make a deal. I think, from what I hear, Putin would like to see me, and we'll meet as soon as we can. I'd meet immediately. Every day we don't meet, soldiers are being killed in a battlefield.
And so are innocent people. Donald Trump from the Oval Office yesterday about meeting with Vladimir Putin. Get to the table or else. Trump's message to Russia is clear. You are killing yourself in the war, and they never should have started it to begin with, and then plan on the bombs that would bring Russia to its knees and would be a boon for America and Ukraine. It's in the Washington Post. We'll go over it.
Number two.
I'm not going back to Haiti. Trump, you feel me? Yo, Biden forever, bro. Thank Obama for everything that he did for me, bro.
That's a Haitian migrant. No, that's not scripted. That is a criminal arrested and grabbed and ripped out by ICE in Boston, as criminals in every major city are being scooped up and shipped out as Donald Trump's first round of immigration battle in the courts does not go his way, but was not unexpected.
Number one.
My message to every business in the world is very simple. Come make your product in America and we will give you among the lowest taxes of any nation on earth.
And that is the president's pro-American attitude to a global audience, saying it to their faces. President tells the world's elite, America is first in every way. Come on board or be run over. Why I think that there is zero fallout from that take it or leave it attitude. And here's why. The president of the United States says, look, when it comes to our alliances, you're going to pull your part. When it comes to global trade, we're going to balance it out. And I'm going to be aggressive about it. Congressman Austin Pfluger joins us now from Texas. Congressman, great to see you again. Thanks so much for the invite the other night. Great scene. You have such loyal constituents celebrating the president's inaugural win. Your thoughts about his first 3 days?
Well, Brian, great to be with you. We were so glad that you got a chance to come to the Black Tie and Boots Texas inaugural ball with LJ. You guys were welcome. We'll make you an honorary Texan. But, you know, I think back to the address, and Donald Trump said, I was saved by God to make America great again. That's exactly what he's starting off. Right to business. He drilled down literally on the topics that our country needs to get back on track with, whether it's border security, energy security, our economy, or military. I served, as you mentioned. And look, how long did it take Biden to go visit places that were devastated by natural disasters? And President Trump's already telling the people of this country, even those in California who didn't vote for him, that I care about you, you mean something to me, and I'm going to help you. I love it. He's already doing a great job.
So we're already seeing when it comes to immigration, nobody has it worse than Texas. You had to spend your own taxpayer dollars to have the Texas National Guard do what the Border Patrol should be doing and what the federal government should be backing, but they didn't. So you had to build your own wall on top of that. Now, finally, they're grabbing some of the criminals who probably came through your border and they're now in our cities creating havoc. Here's Bill Malusian out and about with ICE in Boston. Cut 18.
So you guys got your main target just now, but you got somebody else. What just happened?
So our main target was released by a sanctuary jurisdiction, not honoring a detainer. That person was released back into the community, and when we went to go find him, he's with somebody else who was previously removed from the United States. So he's going to go today, too.
So that is an ICE officer explaining to everything that was going on. We see this over and over again. We have about 500-plus arrests of criminals who are here illegally. Your thoughts about the help that's on its way that has arrived?
Well, this is exactly what our country needed. I was an Air Force fighter pilot. I deployed to the Middle East. We fought over there so we didn't have to have these horrible criminals and terrorists, in many cases, come to our borders. President Trump has his right to issue the executive orders to immediately end funding to sanctuary cities, to tell people that if you're here illegally, and especially those who have committed crimes, that you're going to be deported, and there is help on the way. And I think everyone is motivated to get this done, to secure our country. This shouldn't be a political thing. Our border is not a political thing. It's just the security of every family that lives here. And I'm proud to lead the Counterterrorism Subcommittee on Homeland Security, and we will continue to root out any thread of counterterrorism in this country.
I mean, we had four members of that Venezuelan gang was scooped up. We had several people convicted of sex crimes against minors scooped up. And we have a mayor, a Democratic mayor in New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey, complaining that they weren't given a heads up in the sanctuary city that ICE was coming. How long can this sanctuary city stand in America?
Well, I don't think it's going to last much longer. The funding is going to end. The lawsuits, I mean, President Trump issued many executive orders on day one targeted at the lack of care for their communities and building this wall around a city saying you're a sanctuary city. We're going to target that. If they want to claim that they're a sanctuary city, then expect to have no federal funding. And President Trump obviously has done this with his executive orders.
So they gave the Coast Guard new orders, start focusing on Haiti and some of the surrounding refugees coming our direction. He fired the head of the Coast Guard because she doesn't seem aggressive enough. He also froze all international, operations that were bringing people here, refugees here, including Afghanistan. And some of these veterans have come and written a letter to Trump to say a lot of these people have helped us out, saved our lives. Can you make an exemption? Do you think it's time for the administration to look at things like this?
Well, first and foremost, he's right. I mean, they have to halt and triage what Joe Biden did and reverse the chaos that we had for the last 4 years. And yes, there will be time for that conversation. And many of my colleagues served in Afghanistan as well, but let's start the triaging. Let's stop the massive amount, the millions of people who've come into this country illegally. I've been to the border many, many times, and I've seen it with my own eyes. We only live a couple of hours from the border, in fact. So there will be time for that conversation. But right now, he is right to halt all refugee admissions into the United States until policy aligns with U.S. interest. And that's the executive order. That's the verbiage from his executive order right there.
Right. They say hundreds. This was in the Military Times today. Hundreds of veterans and service-affiliated personnel have drafted a letter to members of Congress to open up the gates to people that have proven themselves in battle. So we'll see where that goes. Hopefully the president is open to that. He's also demanding that the Taliban pay back, give us $7 billion for the equipment we left behind. They're not going to do it. But he's also saying we're going to stop all aid for 90 days. That's smart. I am not comfortable with giving aid to Afghanistan.
Well, he understands leverage. Just like you mentioned earlier in the Big Three about the situation in Russia, he understands leverage. And aid to any country should be dependent on good behavior. We shouldn't just be writing these blank checks to anyone around the world, especially if they're not complying with things that are beneficial, mutually beneficial to our country. So, again, he understands leverage. Joe Biden did not. We've been in a mess. I'm proud of the fact that he's coming to the table and he's bringing up things like the Panama Canal. He's bringing up the equipment that we disastrously left in Afghanistan, because that's the right approach. And Americans deserve to know that their taxpayer dollars are not just going to be wasted.
So it's not your chamber, but the Senate is voting on Pete Hegseth, we think today, sometime tonight. Your thoughts about him running the Defense Department?
Well, I've met with Mr. Hegseth. In fact, I put an air power group together and gave him some thoughts and ideas on air power. He is going to shake things up. He's going to focus on lethality and readiness. Brian, the situation in the military is dire. And I'll just specifically talk about the Air Force. We're the smallest and the least capable right now. We've been stretched very thin over the past decade without being recapitalized. Pete Hegseth is the right guy. He's going to get confirmed tonight. I've written an op-ed and actually led 30-plus members of the House in a supportive letter to the Senate. I believe they're going to do the right thing. We saw the vote yesterday. And it's time that we get our military back on track to deter our enemies and not fight the wars that Biden, I think, wanted to get us into or didn't have the strength to deter around the world from people like Iran, Russia, North Korea, and the Chinese Communist Party.
It's just so unconscionable that Chuck Schumer says for people that don't have unanimous support like Rubio, we're going to slow down the confirmation hearings. So they filibustered for countless hours yesterday, where at one point Cory Booker was reading poems. Just reading poems from people, because it was just a fake filibuster to slow down the confirmation of John Ratcliffe. On what planet is that responsible lawmaking?
It is not. And this is, they've been filibustering our country for 4 years, and they put us into this chaotic spiral where we're less strong economically, we're weaker, and our borders are open. John Ratcliffe, Pete Hegseth, these personalities are strong, national security-minded thinkers, proud of the job they're going to do. But of course, Democrats are going to try to stand in the way, but it's not going to work. The mandate we got from the November election says very clearly that we want security, we want strength, and let's restore our dignity again.
Congressman Pfluger, our guest, and Congressman, I just want to bring up a little bit where this, how this plays out. So Schumer tells Murphy to slow down Ratcliffe. Up next is going to be the Secretary of Defense. How does it work in our behalf to not have a CIA director? Any acting member could be great. They don't have any sense of long-term security or running an agency. Then Kristi Noem will be up next. She did great out of committee, virtually unanimous. Scott Bessent is going to get 80 votes. We can't get him through. Sean Duffy, perfect score out of committee, can't get him through. And then Kash Patel is coming up next week. I'm sure it'll be controversial on Thursday. We have Dick Durbin on the record saying he's going to have a problem with that. So a lot of this stuff is really hurting the country. And I think that they're getting, Chuck Schumer thinks he's gaining support or showing a toughness with it. And I just could not be more disappointed by it. And John Thune says you're working through the weekend because of it. Don't these idiots know that, you know, do they want to work 14 straight days? Just to hold up, for what reason? Do they have lives that they want to get back to for a weekend?
Well, Brian, you're right. I don't know what they think they're doing that benefits the country, but it certainly does harm. And, you know, the bureaucracy under an acting is nowhere near what the agenda is of President Trump to come in and shake things up and to cut the red tape and to get back to business. You know, I served in the Pentagon. And I served under an acting secretary, and in no way, shape, or form is it anywhere near the effectiveness of having a Senate-confirmed secretary who can make the decisions to move the department in the right direction. So, no, I think Majority Leader Thune is right. Let's keep working, and I'm not in the Senate, but mm-hmm. Let's keep working. Let's get these hearings done, and they'll just extend the pain if they don't want to come to the table and get these folks confirmed and moving on with the mandate that the American public gave us.
Lastly, here's Donald Trump yesterday on the Ukraine-Russia war. Cut 21.
Did President Zelensky tell you that personally?
Yeah, sure. He's ready to negotiate a deal. He'd like to stop. He's somebody that lost a lot of soldiers, and so did Russia. Lost a lot. Russia lost more soldiers. They lost 800,000 soldiers. Would you say that's a lot? I'd say it's a lot.
And he says that, you know, the message to Putin is get to the table or we're going to start hitting you with massive sanctions. And one of the things they have is a lot of frozen Russian funds, and most of them, 200 billion of it's in Belgium with a private company. So at one point, and General Keane writes about it with Mark Thiessen in The Washington Post today, we got to start maybe collecting that and saying, why are we paying for it? Let Russia pay for their own demise.
Well, it's not just that. It's also the oil revenues. And I think what Vladimir Putin knows about President Trump is that he is serious. Joe Biden wasn't serious about sanctions. He wasn't serious about those revenues.
And you know why? Because he didn't want the price of oil to go up because it would have cost the price at the pump to go up, and he didn't want to pay for it politically. That's my view.
You're right, and he wasn't serious about holding anybody accountable. Trump is the ultimate deal maker. He has leverage. He stands with credibility because people know around the world that he means what he says and he says what he means. So whether it's this or the release of the hostages that we saw just before the inauguration or balancing out the greater Middle East or deterring China, President Trump is going to do it. I have full faith that there will be a deal, that they will come to a ceasefire and that the blood will stop in the Ukraine. And this is important. It's important for our security.
He is serves in the military. He's now serving in Washington. Congressman Austin Pfluger, thanks so much.
Brian, thanks for having me. Great to see you this week, and thanks for talking about these topics.
Absolutely, and we'll have you on again real soon. All right, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Your call's next, 1-866-408-7669, or you can write me at briankilmeade.com. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in details.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We just have to say this, how inhumane and wrong this is. But it's also just disturbing that he's asking law enforcement to break the law by not getting a warrant to execute some of these raids, to have this raid in Newark, New Jersey, be a warrantless raid into a private business that was targeted because it was owned by immigrants. It's just wrong.
That is Ilhan Omar, talks about how much he's enjoyed, like, in America all of a sudden, and that everyone else is pursuing the American dream. And why did President Trump get elected with this horrible attitude towards immigrants, as if we haven't been schooled on it, we haven't been affected by it, we don't have a new city, is overrun by it, bankrupt because of it. So she talked about unwarranted raids. Well, I want to give ICE every advantage possible if they're going to go into what is going to be a criminal haven without tipping anybody off. So I'm not sure the details. I know in Newark, New Jersey, there was a raid, and one person who was with a gangster from Venezuela was arrested. So was the other guy. The other guy evidently had no record and was a veteran. So sorry he was scooped up by it, but I would ask you, was he asking directions or was he doing any type of business with him? So as you also heard Bill Malusian's report, one of the ICE agents in charge of the operation said that we came in for one guy. We did a background check on the other guy he was with, and it turns out he's wanted too, a convicted criminal. When we come back, Mike Summers is going to be here, the 15th chief executive of the American Petroleum Institute. Is the time for fossil fuels is back. We're out of the Paris Accord. It is done. We're done with this new Green Deal. We're giving up on windmills. There's too much negative side to it. Mike Summers on that.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We can supply the whole world with energy. That's what we have. For hundreds of years, we could supply the whole with, at this moment, the best energy, because natural gas is clean and it's powerful. You need power, and it's consistent, not like wind. The wind blows and then it doesn't blow, and the things cost a fortune. They're made in China and they kill the birds, and they're horrible.
So that is President Trump being very candid. He calls it a new green scam. He's back to fossil fuels, and we're out of the Paris climate deal. Remember, there was a debate on that? No even debate now. We all know it's a joke. We know that Russia and China are given these long runways to get in line, and we don't even think they do it. China's building more coal plants than anybody else, although they are leading the way in many ways with batteries and electric cars. Mike Summers joins us now, the 15th chief executive of the American Petroleum Institute, the largest trade association on all aspects of America's natural gas and oil. Mike, what does it feel like to have a president not vilify your industry?
Well, Brian, great to be with you. What I'll say is that happy days are here again. We finally have a president that understands how important oil and gas is. It's just going to be nice to have someone that recognizes how important from an energy security perspective that oil and gas are going to continue to be for decades and decades to come.
So a couple of things. I understand that for the most part, the oil industry kind of likes oil and gas at $70 a barrel. And you don't really at this moment want to do a lot of new drilling. What do you want to do?
Well, you know, there are two ways that we can influence the price of at the pump or your natural gas prices at home, which really powers most people's electricity. You can fix the government regulations that are out there. And the Biden administration did everything that they could to cut down on the amount of oil and gas produced in the United States, particularly on federal lands and in federal waters.
Can I hold you but there? Because do you know during the campaign they would say, you know, oil and gas has got hit all-time highs during their time? What do you say to people when they say when they hit you with those stats?
Well, what I'd say is that was despite Biden policies, not because of Biden policies. Everywhere that they could restrict American production, they did. And the federal offshore, in the Gulf, for example, the Gulf of America now, everything they did on federal lands, leasing on federal lands was down 90% during the Biden administration. They cut out hundreds of thousands of acres in the great state of Alaska, where we have vast resources. So there is a kind of what I would call an energy policy lag, that it takes a while for policies implemented by one administration to take effect, 4 or 5 years, in fact. So what we were real concerned about under the Biden administration is that they were really sowing the seeds for the next energy crisis. So now that we have a president that actually wants to continue to support American energy, it's going to be great to be able to develop these resources because America and the world is going to need them.
All right. So can I separate natural gas? And I don't pretend to be a oil and gas expert, but I'm fascinated by it. And also had a chance to do a couple of features on the history of oil and gas in America, how it was invented in Pennsylvania. Just the whole thing, I find it fascinating. But with natural gas, out of nowhere, they decide to pause it last year. While Japan is begging for it and Europe is looking for a substitute for Russian natural gas, where are we at right now?
Well, that's exactly right. What the Biden administration did last year was they put a pause on new export permits for American liquefied natural gas. So what that means is that the way you transport natural gas overseas is you freeze it. And then you look at, and that's how you liquefy that natural gas. And then we ship it overseas to American allies all over the world. And so what the Biden administration did was it essentially said that we're not going to allow that to happen anymore for new export terminals. And that put almost immediately shut off new capital investment in the Gulf of Mexico, where most of these LNG terminals are. The signal that it sent to our allies was incredibly damaging, particularly at a time during two hot wars, one in the Middle East and one, of course, in Ukraine, where Europe was begging for this natural gas, as were our allies in Asia, like Japan. So the Trump administration on day one reversed that decision. And we're now getting capital back into the United States, and we're going to start building more terminals. We have more natural gas than we know what to do with in the United States. And we will for hundreds of years into the future, as long as the demand is there. And we need to continue to support our allies. And by the way, the environmental benefits of natural gas are incredible as well. Most of the time, it is replacing coal in these countries, and that allows them to clean up their environment, as we have been able to because of the switch from coal to natural gas.
All right, so let's talk about ramping it up. We want to be the number one customer to our allies. And I know they were talking about a pipeline through the Alps, through Europe, in Spain, through the Alps, and it almost got done. But France was concerned about their environment. They certainly want to reverse that. I hear now, I'm not inside French politics, but we could use our natural gas and become the number one deliverer to our allies and keep Russia on the sidelines, even if things settle down in Ukraine. Do we have the terminal set up to be able to do that?
Here's a scary data point, Brian. The Europeans actually imported more LNG, liquefied natural gas. They got more LNG from Russia than they have ever before last year. So they basically switched from pipe gas from Russia to liquefied natural gas from Russia. We don't want Europe to be dependent on Russia. We want them to be buying it from here in the United States. And the way you do that is we have to build more of these terminals. And a number of them were blocked by the Biden administration from construction. We're going to get those terminals back up and going. That means great jobs for places like Louisiana and Texas, and hopefully at some point, Pennsylvania. There are vast amounts of natural gas resources in the state of Pennsylvania. If we could get an LNG terminal in Philadelphia, it would be make a world of difference, particularly to European customers.
Mike Summers, our guest, he's running the American Petroleum Institute. So, Mike, to get that done, do you need Pennsylvania's permission, the governor's permission, or is that a federal thing?
In fact, it would be mainly a state decision. And Governor Shapiro in the state of Pennsylvania currently has a commission looking at doing that. It would certainly help American production because we need to get that gas from where it is to where it needs to be, which is to customers in Europe. And think about the benefits to American national security as well. We've become a net energy exporter in this country because of that fracking revolution that started in 2005. Think about where we were in 2005. In 2005, we were producing 5 million barrels of oil every single day. And now we're producing over 13 million barrels of oil every day. That's not because the government told us to. It's because this industry innovated. And we need to make sure that we can continue to promote that kind of innovation, not just here in the United States, but all over the world.
You know, Barack Obama really benefited from fracking, the success of fracking, which was all done on a pure entrepreneurial, big risk, big upside, big downside. It is truly the American spirit. That story is fascinating, what fracking has done. But the Obama administration is the one who benefited from it.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I give Barack Obama a credit in many ways. He didn't stand in the way of this historic innovation. But in many ways, it was because of what was happening on private lands, not on public lands. The whole Gulf of America is public waters, federally owned waters. And for the first time last year, we didn't have one lease sale in the Gulf. We need to get those lease sales going again. And we know that President Trump is going to be focused on that.
So wait, you do want, so you say you're not in a big rush to drill more, but you do want more permits in order to explore more?
We absolutely need more permits. As you know, these are diminishing resources. Right now, we depend very heavily on the Permian Basin in Texas. But if we're going to continue to meet the demands of Americans and world consumers, we need to develop all of our resources. That means offshore. That means in Oklahoma. That means in North Dakota. That means in Alaska and everywhere where these resources are found. So we can't be so dependent just on one basin in the United States because we're going to need these products for decades and decades to come.
Okay. So what blows me away that we're supposed to have sanctions on Russia and stop the oil. But you're saying Europe is buying from third parties?
Yeah, I mean, they're buying directly from Russia with Russian LNG. And we certainly don't want them to be able to continue to do that. But they need a replacement. I mean, we don't want them to freeze during the winter. We want them to be getting American natural gas. That'll make them less dependent on Russia. That will stop feeding the Russian war machine. We got to get it done. But these policies that we've seen over the last 4 years have been very detrimental to that effort.
So how well do you think the new Department of Energy head, I think it's Chris Wright, How well do you think that they know what you just said? Do they know the urgency to build terminals? Do they need ramp up time? And how hard will it be to execute some of these deals if you have an executive branch that wants to get it done?
Well, one of the things that we're very excited about is the new DOE Secretary, Chris Wright. I can't think of a person more qualified than Chris Wright to be Secretary of Energy. He knows energy, not just oil and gas, better than just about anybody that I know. So we have a great opportunity here to really start anew the American energy revolution. And that is incredibly exciting, not just for oil and gas, but for all kinds of energy.
Right. So let's see if he can do it. But is there something legislatively that has to happen? Or is the EPA, even though it's going to be run by Lee Zeldin? I always think that you guys have the great ideas and there's always everyone suing everybody that slows everything down. Is that one thing we have to be? Are you prepared? Do you have to be prepared to litigate all these things?
Well, President Trump started this on day one. It is now Congress's turn to step up and do the legislative fixes that have to happen. We put out a what we call the API 5-point policy roadmap, which are five things that the government should do immediately to make sure that we continue to have the energy that we need going forward. You can find that at api.org. They're common sense things. The president did a lot of them. But to have current, durable energy policy going forward, we need legislation so that it can't be subject to the whims of a future president that is anti-American energy.
Well, I'm firmly in your corner because I also know you guys are responsible. You care about the environment because you know it's detrimental to your own business if you're not.
So, that's right.
And can I just ask you, what is your legitimate investment in green technology and green energy? Where do you think, where do you focus outside fossil fuels?
Absolutely. So one of the things that the oil and gas industry knows very well is the subsurface. No one knows the subsurface better. We have incredible technology. We have geologists. We have got computer scientists. We're using AI to understand the subsurface better. You know, right now we're going down 5,000 feet and then drilling horizontally 5,000 feet. It's incredible technology. It's the equivalent of landing a man on the moon. So one of the great advantages of knowing the subsurface is we're investing heavily, particularly in geothermal kinds of energy, which again would be reliable. It is environmentally safe. It could be the real key to the future in certain regions. The truth of the matter, though, Brian, as you know this, some places wind makes sense, some places solar makes sense. Natural gas makes sense everywhere. And that's why we need that natural gas infrastructure to ensure that we can continue to power the economy that is going to be distressed and in need for more energy because of the dawn of more data centers and more artificial intelligence.
Mike Summers, thanks so much. Your phone, you're going to be quite busy over the next couple of years. So feel free to educate America and let everybody know what goes on. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Really appreciate your time today.
Absolutely. 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, how Donald Trump took on the world directly on Sunday. And it was the same message he told you in Pennsylvania, or he might have told you if you saw him live in Florida. He took that message to the elite of the world. And I think they were more apt to listening now. They might not have a choice. Brian Kilmeade.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What makes this go around with Trump so much more dangerous than the first time around is exactly what you're saying. It's that he is much more normalized this time. These people that were scared before about like being associated with him from the most common basic level to the most elite level, they're all in now because this is now a billionaire feeding frenzy. It is a kiss-ass race.
So that is AOC with Jon Stewart as they commiserate together how little people care about their opinions. As funny as Jon Stewart will always be, I find they have no idea what they're doing. I watch Monday's show because he's the only Daily Show episode I would watch because he's the writer and understands the last 20 years what it was like to from the Bush to Clinton on down and all the controversies. They have no idea what's going on. They have no idea why people are ignoring them, not interested in their sarcasm, not affecting the speech. I mean, there was a time when Jimmy Kimmel single-handedly stopped the end of Obamacare. They were going to spike Obamacare and come up with their skinny alternative prior to John McCain. And Schumer was feeding Jimmy Kimmel information about, and a lot of it was wrong, about how many people were going to be affected, how many homeless people were going to die, and how many families were going to have to kill off their children. The most severe things possible. It actually changed the dialogue. And now you have AOC on a small podcast with Jon Stewart with 1970s headsets on, talking about the scary thing about Donald Trump is how normal people, how he's been normalized as a person. Now, you might want to do some reverse forensic and say, why is that? Most of the people voted for him. He got the popular vote, won every battleground state, made huge gains in your state of New York. Why? Because of things he's saying, it's a time for common sense. And, you know, they're not getting any help from any Democrats either. James Carville weighed in. He was on his war room. And this is what he said about where his party is heading and how much harm Joe Biden has done. Cut 34.
We know Biden. Actually, we know you and I know him personally. And I think it's fair to say that we're a long time at some level admirers of Joe Biden. And what he's done to himself is no one wants to hear from this guy anymore. Okay. Right. Just go to your condo in Rehoboth and stay there. And that's not because we're bad people or we mean people. It was all his doing. All his doing.
I don't know what you're talking about. You put him into office and gave him the nomination, told him to pick a vice president that was had to be a woman of color, couldn't find anybody competent, made a terrible choice. You gave him a left-wing agenda, what he implemented. You pretended as if he wasn't failing. We knew he was. Ridiculed people that pointed it out, physically failing, mentally failing, angry all the time. And then when he dropped out, you said he didn't do it soon enough, while at the same time calling him George Washington. And then when he does drop out, the vice president loses, and you're blaming him. And then he blames them for kicking him out. I've never seen a party in more disarray. As Meghan McCain tweeted out this morning, and I retweeted it, she says, never in her life did she think that the Republican Party would be the in party, the cool party, the one that you want to be associated with. Never in her life. She says, I've taken so much ridicule my whole life being obviously a famous Republican, and now everything is reversed. I'm getting a kick out of the fact that they're all turning on each other. Karen Bass in Miami is in Los Angeles is turning on Gavin Newsom, the firefighter who's politically correct, DEI hire, turning on the mayor. You got Carville turning on Biden, all Democrats turning on Biden. The Obama bros on the podcast, said Joe Biden is really, the pardons have hurt the party. I've never seen a party in more disarray.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Happy to be here. I was thrilled to run into Douglas Murray at the Liberty Ball. He's coming up at the bottom of the hour. And just to get insight and to what it was like, because he goes from Israel to Europe, giving speeches in Germany, comes back to America, featured columnist, dinner with Rupert Murdoch. So his perspective, he's a deep thinker, he's got everyone's respect. He's got a new book coming out, Democracies and Death Cults, Israel and the Future of Civilization. That's coming out on April 8th. Jackie Heinrich is going to come up in 15 minutes. She's traveling with the President of the United States. She's already in North Carolina. She's with him. She's going to meet him there in North Carolina, the site of the devastating results of Helene. Hurricane still not recovered. Then the President goes back in his Air Force One, which must be kind of cool for the President to get back into. And then he flies out to Los Angeles. Jackie Heinrich with us right away. So we have a lot to discuss. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I think Russia should want to make a deal. Maybe they want to make a deal. I think from what I hear, Putin would like to see me, and we'll meet as soon as we can. I'd meet immediately. Every day we don't meet, soldiers are being killed in a battlefield.
Get to the table already. Donald Trump's message to Russia is clear. You're killing your country in a war they never should have started to begin with. And guess what? He has a plan and he has some leverage on Russia. And this could be a boon for America and Ukraine.
Number two.
I'm not going back to Haiti. Trump, you feel me? No Biden forever, bro. Thank Obama for everything that he did for me, bro.
Massive ICE raids rage as criminals in every major city are being scooped up and shipped out as Trump loses the first round of an immigration legal battle in the courts.
Number one.
My message to every business in the world is very simple. Come make your product in America, and we will give you among the lowest taxes of any nation on earth.
Donald Trump at the World Economic Forum. He couldn't go to Davos. He had this inauguration thing cramping his schedule, but he was able to zoom in, saying it to their face. The president tells the world elite, it's for America first in every way. Come on board or be run over. Why think there will be zero fallout where everyone would be talking about how we're losing allies and how we come off egocentric and we shouldn't have the swagger? Well, the president's rehab of the country is getting the swagger back. I like the days when America was resented rather than people saying, what is wrong with America? Maybe there's an in-between on that. I haven't seen it. But President Trump said, basically, we're in a terrible situation, but we're coming out of it. And we're going to get out of it. He says he gets things done. He has his entire life. And he's going to get this done. So he was in Davos. I thought this was worth bringing up. I said, most of you working during the day, you don't have a chance to see this. So you mentioned and you heard pretty clearly in the open that he's telling everyone to come back. We're going to even lower the corporate tax rate to 15% if you build your products here. He's already got Stellantis, the new Chrysler, to build back their, bring back their auto manufacturing, even has the number of plants and the locations to do it. So that has worked. What about everybody else? And what about when it comes to energy? What are you going to do? I love this. Brian Moynihan was there. He's a very successful banker at Bank of America. And they were debanking people like, Melania Trump and other conservatives were having problems getting debanked or not allowed to park their money or get loans. So instead on the World Economic Forum playing nice and going behind the scenes to say you better change your policy, Trump is Trump. Cut five.
Speaking of you, and you've done a fantastic job, but I hope you start opening your bank to conservatives, because many conservatives complain that the banks are not allowing them to do business within the bank. And that included a place called Bank of America. They don't take conservative business. And I don't know if the regulators mandated that because of Biden or what, but you and Jamie and everybody, I hope you're going to open your banks to conservatives, because what you're doing is wrong.
How great is that? And he just blew it off. I know he didn't. It landed. But for him to say, Mr. President, you're wrong on that. President would have gone, I think I'm right. And then you have a fight in front of literally the most powerful people in the world. So he just blew past it. But the message obviously was sent, don't you think? And Jamie Dimon and the president seem to have gotten over any problems they had together. And he did call out Jamie Dimon, too, for J.P. Morgan to make sure you don't do the same things even next time. I feel like these bankers are free. They also, the president came out and flat out said the new Green Deal is a scam. And he said it to a bunch of people who start every meeting by pledging allegiance to the Al Gore segment of the world. The earth's going to fall apart unless we do something. But here's the president on energy. Cut two.
We have more oil and gas than any other country, and we're going to have more. And right. With Anwar, you know, which he ended, Anwar is the biggest. Anwar could be, that's in Alaska, could be as big or bigger than Saudi Arabia. We have more than any other country. It's a great thing. It's a great asset, because China doesn't have that. I mean, China does not have that. They have to go out the old-fashioned way and buy it. We have more than anybody. We're going to become a wealthy country again, and energy is going to lead the way.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, you just heard in an earlier hour, and please play it back. We'll probably post it online with the president of the American Petroleum Institute. And he said that right now, Russia's buying more Europe's buying more natural gas from Russia than ever before. Really? We're supposed to put sanctions on them to get their attention and let them know they can't invade other nations. But we have not filled the gap and backfilled them and let us be the number one supplier. Give them a friends and family discount. Make sure they leave Russia alone. And even when Russia pulls out of Ukraine, they're not going to have Europe as a customer, because they're not a reliable deliverer of oil and gas. He goes on energy. Cut four.
We don't want windmills in this country. We're putting an order on it. I've already sort of done it. We don't want windmills. If you have a house and you're in vision of a windmill, your house is worth half. It's a disaster, and nobody wants them, and they're the most expensive energy of any kind of energy. You know what else people don't like? Those massive solar fields built over land.
that cover 10 miles by 10 miles. I mean, they're ridiculous, the whole thing. And by the way, you know where the panels come from? 100% of the panels, they're made in China.
He's 100% right. We gave up. Even though we came up, we were leading the world in solar energy and solar technology. Russia does it quicker. They do it cheaper. So therefore, they're the number one maker. So why wouldn't they want to go solar? They have more rare earth. Why wouldn't they want to go with electric cars while buying more coal than anybody else? So the president's going to point this out. In the beginning, you thought, oh, my goodness, I'm not sure we should be saying that. And now forget it. Yeah, be responsible. Let's think clean air. But if windmills are killing, you put the windmills in the ocean, they're confusing the whales. Ask anyone in New Jersey. And then when you put them in the ocean, there's so much drilling to secure them into the ocean floor. It's causing havoc. We know the noise it makes, and we know they're almost impossible to repair. Has anyone thought about that? So the president just saying it. Here's Batya Unger-Sargon of Newsweek last night, just noticing the elites listening to President Trump, who just cosmetically looks like he's czaring over everyone because he's been beamed in on this huge screen over the stage. Cut 10.
What we just oversaw was the total capitulation of the global elites to Donald Trump, the tribune of the American working class, the same people who have endlessly mocked him and laughed at him and booed him and tried to destroy him are now on their knees, Laura, begging for a scrap of his approval.
And I think that's true. And they did mock him. And I've always heard that. And that's why guys like Mike Bloomberg can't stomach it. They think they should be the person. Why is he the billionaire that gets through? What is it about me? I was mayor, paid millions of dollars to become mayor. I was supposed to be president. They can't believe this other guy did. But Trump's got many more attributes and many more positive qualities than anyone gave him credit for. And we know about the detractions. And you notice we're not even hearing anything about an impeachment, illegitimacy, not worthy, not presidential. It's not happening. Here's Victor Davis Hanson, an esteemed military historian. Cut 12.
That was very strange because the Davos people that run it, he shredded every one of their most cherished ideas, you know, of open borders, illegal immigration, New Green Deal. He just shredded. I thought their heads were going to explode when he called it the New Green scam, and he called oil liquid gold. So I thought the questions were going to be so angry. But, you know, I looked at him very carefully after I heard him on the transcript, and Schwartzman and Moynihan, all these international big bankers were kind of like, well, we're not supposed to say this, but are you serious? You're really going to give us liquid natural gas? You're not going to cut it off?
So smart. I mean, I'm getting a full perspective on how much has changed. I'm getting a different perspective. He's reorienting the world to their face. The guys that didn't think he was the smartest guy, that thought he was the dumbest guy, that thought he was pretending from getting shot in the head to authoring the greatest comeback after five indictments, they have begun to say, you got my attention. They should, because the president's also got the best country, the most powerful. When we come back, Jackie Heinrich joins us from North Carolina. Douglas Murray at the bottom of the hour. So get queued up. My first stop, I promise, will be in Alabama, then over to Fort Lauderdale when we get the calls in a half hour. But listen up, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Our country can no longer deliver basic services in times of emergency, as recently shown by the wonderful people of North Carolina, been treated so badly. And other states who are still suffering from a hurricane that took place many months ago. Or more recently, Los Angeles, where we are watching fires still tragically burn from weeks ago without even a token of defense.
So that is the President of the United States talking about the need to get aid to North Carolina and California. And he's going to both places today. Then he's dropping by Las Vegas to say thank you for delivering Nevada Jackie Heinrich said, I don't need a ride. I'll meet you in North Carolina. She was there helping us out this morning, and the president is on his way. Jackie, what do you think is going to be accomplished today? Because I don't see a high-level meeting or anything. Is it something the president just wants to bring attention to?
You know what, Brian? I think we're going to get more detail on his plans to overhaul FEMA, because I'm sitting in the parking lot right now of a burned-out Japanese restaurant, and the river behind me is full of debris. I've been talking to people involved in the cleanup, and they say 122 days later, FEMA is still not approving requests fast enough. I mean, they're only 50% through their recovery effort. The Army Corps of Engineers says they've already removed 1 million cubic yards of debris, but in just one section of the river in a nearby county, Polk County, that area of the river that's really important for tourism, there are about 2 million cubic yards of vegetation still just sitting there. They haven't even gotten to the waterways yet. So you've had all these calls for the agency to be overhauled because they're just sort of bungled by their own bureaucracy. And it also comes after the president threatened to condition aid potentially for states unless they have better, you know, resource management. California brought that into the discussion. So I think that, you know, in North Carolina, it's all Republicans greeting him. They want to see this overhaul happen. Congressman Chuck Edwards, who represents this district, he voiced support for that overhaul. In California, you're going to see some Democrats like Governor Gavin Newsom scramble to his side to try to get a better idea of what their futures might look like because, you know, updating policies for that state has to go through, you know, the environmentalists. And that might be a tough thing for them to achieve if that aid was conditioned on certain reforms. So we'll see different receptions in both places.
Very interesting, because, you know, in those situations, it's get people money, then find give them a battle, get them money, get them a place to live, and then figure out how they're going to rebuild and if they're going to rebuild. So if FEMA was out of money, which they were, they have it now. Everyone agrees. So get this money. Is there a problem from what you can see? Is there a problem getting heavy machinery up there to clear things out and build things up?
You know, I'm not necessarily seeing that. I know that that was an issue like immediately after the hurricane hit. You recall there were all of those complaints that, you know, the military didn't get the helicopters into the mountainous areas fast enough. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of heavy equipment around me right now. There's a guy with a bulldozer in this parking lot scooping up a giant pile of rubble. But what I'm hearing is just that the Army Corps of Engineers will say, hey, this project needs XYZ. They'll put it in the system to get an approval, and it'll sit there for 3-4 months. And this is, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers handles disaster responses all over the country. So, you know, they can speak to this being a problem, not just for this hurricane, but for all of the disasters. And when you've got FEMA as part of DHS, you know, I think that there's going to be a broader discussion about how, where that agency is best placed, and what levels of bureaucracy approvals have to go through before they can get those resources out. Because you've got really smart people ready to do the work. It's just getting the stamp of approval and, you know, all that stuff out the door for it to get going.
So now the president's going to be landing in California after later on today, be early evening there. And Gavin Newsom's going to meet him on the tarmac. He said yesterday he doesn't really look to meet with Gavin Newsom. But Newsom's going to make sure he's there. This is going to be awkward, don't you think?
I think it's going to be interesting. I don't know if it'll be awkward. I think that, you know, Gavin Newsom is sort of on the ropes right now because his policies have been widely blamed for, you know, leaving the Santa Ynez Reservoir empty, 117 million gallon reservoir that was empty for maintenance at the time of this fire. LA Mayor Karen Bass, you know, slashing the department's budget, fire department's budget. She claims it didn't have an impact on the response. But meantime, you know, that doesn't sell very well to all the people there who are still, you know, living in the ruins of this fire. So I think that they have to manage, you know, how they address the president here. And you have Karen Bass, you know, the White House just put out the release of who's attending the roundtable. She's going to be there for it. And then Adam Schiff, even, and there's no love lost between Trump and Schiff, he put out a statement to the New York Times saying that he declined an invitation from the Trump team to join in the wildfire briefing, only because he had to stay on Capitol Hill for the Senate votes. So I think that a lot of these Democrats are eager to speak with the president, and he's eager to tell them, hey, you know, I want to see everyone here get help, but we also want to make sure that, you know, we're not mismanaging resources, because there is so much, you know, scrutiny over if you're giving money to all these states and then they're not using it for the right causes. You know, right. Talk about homelessness and how they've dumped so much money into that problem, but then they let these communities burn. I think that it'll be interesting to watch how the two sides interact.
And just real quick, we're under 45 seconds. Republicans and some Democrats are now carrying proposals of their own about making the forest less of a tinderbox and actually keeping vegetation in check and forests healthy. Democrats never said that in the past. That's significant, isn't it?
It's huge. It's absolutely huge, because you can't advocate for fish. You can't advocate for, you know, wildlife and, you know, tribes when you have, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of homes burning to the ground because of these sort of abstract policies which are pushed by these environmental groups or these interest groups. And Democrats, these are their constituents now.
Jackie, you're the best. Have a good time with the president today. It should be fascinating. He actually takes and answers your questions. Imagine.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
My message to every business in the world is very simple. Come make your product in America, and we will give you among the lowest taxes of any nation on earth. If you don't make your product in America, which is your prerogative, then very simply, you will have to pay a tariff.
So the president said that to the world, not to some of the people in the world, not to Central and South America, to the leading so-called elites around the world, leaders, business winners, and thought leaders. Said it to all of them. Said, we're America first. You might not like me, but you better start respecting me. And I think many are. Douglas Murray would know. He travels the globe and talks to those elites. He is the author of The War of the West. He's got a new book coming out April 8th called On Democracies and Death Cults, Israel and the Future of Civilization. Douglas Murray, welcome back.
Great to be back with you, Brian.
Thought about you when the Davos address took place yesterday. I thought it would be quick, brief, and that was it. I thought it was just going to give a cursory, hello, guys, I'm back. I did not know he was going to go full blast. Your thoughts?
I actually did expect him to go full blast. For two reasons. One is that President Trump has had a long time to think about this and to get to know the kind of people he was speaking to at Davos yesterday. He knows these people. He knows these world leaders. He knows the tricks they play. He knows the tricks that financial elites and others play, the way in which manufacturing companies have taken advantage of America, flooded America with cheap products made from abroad. So Trump knows all of that. And that's the first reason why I was not surprised at the tone. The second thing is this crucial thing that Trump's mandate in this term in office is so overwhelming that, of course, he should use the opportunity to do what he did yesterday, not to kind of sidle in and sidle up to these people at Davos, but to say, look, there's a new sheriff in town, and you can decide whether you want to play by the sheriff's rules or not.
Do you think that they view him differently besides the vote? Do you think they're realizing, some of them, that we might have been wrong about this?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the interesting things about financial elite is that they behave differently from some media elites. Some people in the media want to be sort of holdouts and continue to play the sort of games that they played after Trump's first victory in 2016. But finance and money tends to be much better at changing direction, changing course. We've seen that, of course, most obviously in recent weeks with the way in which the tech world has sidled up to Trump. Not people who've been, you know, pretty long-term supporters, but people who really have just come around in, or at least admitted to have come out for Trump in recent weeks, months since his victory. My suspicion will be that the financial elites will also realize you've got to change, you've got to shift, you've got to adapt to the new era. So it's very different from the odd holdout somewhere saying, you know, trying to still pretend Trump's a fascist, Elon Musk's a fascist, and so on. The money will go where it needs to go, where it believes it can make money best. And if that's going to be America under Trump, then it'll move there.
So a couple of things that I think might have struck you, too, is that the president's 78 years old. Doesn't in the beginning, he didn't like crypto. He said it was a way to get the world off the U.S. dollar. Don't like it. The more he listened to it, talked to people and saw how I guess, reviled some Democrats thought they were and how they were being ignored and maybe harassed. He took a look at it. He took a few meetings. He gave a speech. And now between that and AI, he's all in on saying that we have to move forward.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put experts in charge that know how to do it. Listen to what David Sacks, who's in charge of AI and cryptocurrency, said. Cut seven.
For the last 4 years, the Biden administration has basically prosecuted and persecuted crypto companies, really driving them offshore. I've heard so many outrageous stories by founders, by entrepreneurs. The Biden administration would not tell them what the rules of the road were, and they would then get prosecuted. And what the industry wants more than anything else is regulatory clarity. They're saying, just tell us what the rules are. We will abide by them. And the Biden administration would never do that.
So there's going to be a series of meetings. He's going to run them. And they got to come up with a series of rules. You know this crypto world. I don't know how much you're invested in it, but you know the people involved in it. How do you think this comes out? Do you think this is a net positive?
I think it is. I mean, I think that this shows an aside to President Trump that a lot of people don't really give him credit for, which is his adaptability in the face of changing circumstances. Of course, he has some strong principles, strong views, America first, and so on that he sticks with. But it's not the case that when he looks at a problem in business or anything else, and that problem changes, that he doesn't adapt to it. He does. And as you say, his views on crypto have shifted very clearly in recent years. What David Sacks said that just there is absolutely right. I know of people who have been persecuted by authorities in America without even doing business in America because they're in the crypto space. The rules have simply not kept up with evolving technology. And, this is just another sign of why something needed to change in America, which is the Biden administration was just not on top of this stuff. Crypto people were asking for guidance, asking for the rules, and were simply not being given them because the Biden administration did not have people in place to address this. It was one of many things, cans they kicked down the road. And if that changes under Trump, then that is a benefit. Mm-hmm. Investors could decide where they want to put their money, of course. But crypto is here. It's here to stay. And it's best that America is leading the world in it and in regulating it.
Douglas, you know a lot of these guys. I think it's key. So you got Elon Musk, who's different but genius. David Sacks. You have Joe Lonsdale. Then you have Jeff Bezos. How can I help? Bill Gates. What can I do? Mm-hmm. And I got it. And people are pointing out oligarchs and Mark Zuckerberg, too. By the way, as I mentioned to him, he mentioned to me that was one of the insulting things he ever heard. Now he's an oligarch because he went and met with the president of the United States, took that personal. You forget how sometimes they're human beings. But the key for this to work is they have to act ethically. And to get to where they have to be, they got to be smart. They got to be savvy. They got to make mistakes. But overall, they're these top businessmen in the world. Is it possible to put them so close to power and ask them to act ethically for the country and not for themselves?
Well, we'll see, won't we? I mean, with AI in particular, this is moving so fast that America has to simply be on top of the game. If America is not on top of the AI game, then other actors, particularly the Communist Party of China, they will do it unethically. There are several things. One is that there are actually, some serious things that have to be thought through with AI about where the limits of it should be allowed to be. And that's best dealt with in America. That's best addressed in America with American thinkers, American entrepreneurs and others bashing this out, chasing it away. Or chasing it abroad would be a big mistake because it's not like other countries are going to act more ethically than we can act in America on this.
Yeah, you always hear Altman. The first time I saw him, he was saying how exciting AI and how scary it is. And when one of the leading minds says that, I take note. Yeah. Lastly, it's not hard to find Douglas Murray in a war zone in Ukraine. You were there. In Gaza, in Israel, you're there. Now Donald Trump has got the ball, and he wants to get both sides seated. And he's taken on Russia, too, in a way he hasn't in the past. Cut 23.
If they don't settle this war soon, like almost immediately, I'm going to put massive tariffs on Russia and massive taxes and also big sanctions. And I don't want to do that. You know, I love the Russian people. They're great people. I don't want to do that. But we've got to get this war ended. And if they don't make a settlement like fast, and Zelensky, I will say this, he wants to settle now. He's had enough. He shouldn't have allowed this to happen either. No. You know, if he's no angel, he shouldn't have allowed this war to happen. First of all, he's fighting a much bigger entity, much bigger. When he was, talking so brave and so. Now, two things happened. They were brave, but we gave them billions of dollars. The United States spent $200 billion more than Europe. Why did we spend more? You know why? Because Biden never asked Europe to spend more.
Well, there's a series of reasons, but he's seeing that Russia had a role here. For the longest time, he was talking more pro-Russian. Your thoughts?
I think on the Russia-Ukraine conflict, it's in everyone's interests for it to end, obviously. Both sides have lost huge numbers of men. How it ends is very, very complicated. And I am, I have to say, encouraged by President Trump leaning on Putin, leaning on the Russians, because it is, of course, it's their war of aggression. Putin started it. It was Putin who invaded, absolutely no justification, in 2022. So there's a settlement that can be made there, and it will require security assurances, and they'll have to be very strong because there have been security assurances to the Ukrainians before, and they were not respected by the countries that signed them. As to the Middle East, I think you'll see the same thing there as with Trump's threats with Russia. The war in the Middle East in the last 2 years was started because the Iranian Revolutionary Government was rich and is violent. And that's a bad combination. And they paid for and started this war, the Hamas war, their proxy Hamas against Israel. I expect Trump to do with Iran what he's threatening to do with Russia, which is to snuff them out economically in order to make sure that they cannot keep expanding and colonizing the region. I think that could have very, very swift effects in reining in both Russia and Iran. Trump is very fond of saying this would not have happened on his watch. Neither of these wars would have started. I happen to think that that's true. And in the case of the Middle East, it's particularly true because before Trump left office in 2020, the mullahs were begging him to relieve the sanctions on their country. Biden, of course, then flooded the Iranian Revolutionary Government with money, and the region went up in flames. So I think Trump's onto the right thing in both of these cases. Mm-hmm. The crucial thing will be the extent to which he leans on America's friends and allies as opposed to America's enemies. And my hope is he does much more of the latter. But these are two of the trickiest business deals, peace deals imaginable.
General Keane and Mark Thiessen came over the column today using the $300 billion in frozen Russian money and start putting it to the Ukrainians to really bolster up their weapons grade, maybe pay us to get them weapons, and they're doing a lot of their own stuff. Their $200 billion are being held in a Belgian financial service company, and they're making money off the interest while it stays frozen. $5 billion of it is in the U.S. Do you agree with this, roughly in broad strokes, this approach to using Russian money against them?
I've thought for a long time this is a sensible approach. It's certainly a very useful threat. And one of the threats that should be wielded at Vladimir Putin in the coming days. It would be very galling for him to see such a thing happen. But the crucial thing is, Trump has inherited this disorder that Biden left. And he has, of course, promised his supporters that the disorder will be stopped in very short time. That's possible in the case of Ukraine. It's slightly harder in the case of the Middle East. But it's possible. And the central demand of Trump's, by the way, about the Europeans is absolutely bang on. He is always getting bad coverage for this from the European press, as if he's withdrawing from global security. It's no such thing. Trump, too, is doing the same thing he was doing in Trump 1, which is simply saying, why should America be the only country paying for the paying over the odds for the security of countries that are paying under their obligations? And that is absolutely the right question to ask. If the Europeans are worried, and they are worried about Russia, if they're worried, then they should spend accordingly. It should not just be the Americans pulling their weight. Everybody should be.
Absolutely. $183 billion we put in aid, but a lot of it, we give them the weapons, we make the new weapons, and we keep them. So it hasn't, and now we have so much natural, they have so much rare earth and natural resources. Uh-huh. Ukraine would be good for it for a loan. I'm sure people should understand that. So we'll see. It's going to be an exciting time, Douglas, but very few people see it up close like you have. I look forward to your book on democracies and death cults, Israel and the future of civilization. You can order it now. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
In Lafayette, Louisiana, the unusually icy roads had drivers and even weather reporters on edge.
John, you know, we've seen our fair share. Look, there's somebody peeling out. Watch out, John. See, this is something we encourage people not to do. I don't know how cool that guy thinks he is. I wish that Lafayette police officer would roll up on him and shut that down. Hey, man, can you turn your lights on and shut that down? Unbelievable, bro. So that's the kind of stuff we don't love to do, which is why, Acadiana, at times you wonder why we may be standing in certain spots. Just not it, bro. And, you know, John's got a family. I got a family. We're all just trying to do our job, bringing you up to date. That was whack. I know my boy thought he was cool, but I ain't rocking with it. Super lame. Anyway, let me chill out. I tell you what, John, that got me hot, bro. That got me hot, baby. I wish you would roll back over here, man. We'll show him what's happening. I'm just kidding. Anyway, Acadiana, please be safe.
That is so fantastic.
Isn't it?
That is so fat. I mean, I don't. If you're a news director, I don't know. Am I upset? I don't know what the visual is on that.
The visual, I mean, you heard the car peeling out in the background. Like, it's a snowy, icy road in Louisiana. The car is turning and making a left. And then the crew is sort of where, if he were to skid out, he would have gone into them, but they were further back. And then he just guns it. So he's like, it's just completely irresponsible. And it's very entertaining.
And then you get their real life vernacular.
Yes.
Out. Exactly how they'd be. How they be rolling.
Yes, bro.
We'll see. Yeah. This is interesting. Yeah, I thought when you were playing late night television, I think they're just digging in. Everyone except Fallon is just digging in with the anti-Trump stuff, right? I mean, they're not saying, they're not normalizing, they're not treating him on case by case.
No, and they're still not funny. I heard a joke, I didn't even pull it because it wasn't funny, of Kimmel saying, oh, Trump's, you know, releasing all of the information on RFK, JFK, MLK. And it's like, oh, it's going to just say Biden did it. I'm like, really? That's the best you can come up with that lead up?
How many writers? Hey, Patrick, you're in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Brian. Brian, I'll tell you how angry I am at Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, the same, you know, senators that always, you know, have to go, you know, vote with the Democrats. You know, what they're doing to Pete is just horrible. But especially Lisa Murkowski in Alaska, where it's a red state. She's not listening to her constituents. You know,
Patrick, it's all personal. Trump tried to run somebody against her.
Voting system is so rigged and ridiculous. How can Alaskans change that so someone can primary her and have a real shot in putting a real Republican in?
I'm not sure. I guess that ranked choice voting, she lost. And then with the ranked choice voting, when it got down to two, she won again. She's popular with the people of Alaska. What could I tell you? I mean, Senator Sullivan is fantastic. Dan Sullivan. They got Nick Begich as the governor. People love them and their family. But they just can't seem to beat her. And Susan Collins is a moderate. I would think we should get used to those two. But you do have 53. Hey, don't forget, go to BrianKilmeade.com. History, Liberty, and Laughs. I'm going to be in Jacksonville at the Florida Theater on February 15th and on March 22nd at the Factory just outside St. Louis. BrianKilmeade.com now.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So happy you're here. I'm happy, too, that as I move to my guest sheet, I know her name's at the tip of my tongue, but I got to make sure she's on my guest sheet. I knew it. You're the girl from Fox News Sunday, the woman. You're Shannon Bream. And Julian Epstein at the bottom of the hour served as chief counsel to the House Judiciary Committee. He's been very critical of his Democratic Party, where he spent his entire life. He can't even recognize what's going on right now. So Shannon Bream is here to set for Fox News Sunday. The President of the United States has landed in North Carolina to tour the damage from Hurricane Helene. Then he's going to go into the mountains and see where it's really bad and hopefully get some real answers. And the days of showing up, Shannon, just because you want a photo op are over. He's president. Nobody's campaigning. It's the Democratic governor that met him on the tarmac. And then now it's time to go into the mountains and see what the problem is. Also, Melania's there. Is that interesting?
It is. And I think a lot of people want to see that she's, or they enjoy seeing that it looks like she's going to be engaged in some whatever he's doing. We joke around about them being empty nesters because Barron is in college and running apparently now a luxury real estate company that he's going to do. I know he's a youngster, but very ambitious family. But I think people like to see the first lady along on this, especially where it's going to be a situation where these people need really some TLC. They need a hug. They need not only real help, but compassion as well. So I like to see her along on the
trip. I feel differently. I think the hugs were 3 months ago. At this point, I need the money from my insurance company or FEMA to clear out the debris. And I need to, am I going to be able to rebuild here? Can you get the garbage out? And can I get some cash in order to hire my construction company? Yeah. And if that's what's happening. The other thing is the president, again, doing this rare thing, meeting with the press. Again, he's announcing. Mm-hmm. He met with them on the way to the helicopter to come over.
Right, because he wants to shine a light on this, too. And there's been a lot of pressure on him to say how he would do things differently. After being so critical of the way that FEMA has handled Hurricane Helene and the aftermath, he wanted to really put a big spotlight on this. And I think him going is the best way to get cameras and people and attention.
He just said FEMA has let us down. And we know that's Biden's fault. Whose fault is it? It's Biden's fault.
So that means he's got to show up and turn this around. Remember East Palestine, Ohio, where President Biden, I don't think, ever went. President Trump showed up there. He wasn't president. And there were a lot of people who said, gosh, why, you know, is the federal response on this so faulty? And I think that because he's put so much spotlight on it, he's got to show up and he's got to show that he's going to do something differently.
Right. I mean, there's something about showing up and then telling his chief of staff, get this done. Mm-hmm. And then who is with him, the head of the RNC, is also there. Now that Lara Trump is he's from North Carolina and he is right over his right shoulder and he points out, we got to get this done. Hearing from people directly, I know a lot of this stuff is scripted, but I sense with Trump outside patting them down and make sure they don't have any weapons, I think he's going to want to talk to people out there and see what the problem is.
Well, you remember that when these storms were happening during the campaign too, remember he went to Georgia and he showed up there. And the people were crying. I mean, he was definitely the comforter-in-chief, even though he wasn't the comforter-in-chief. Technically, he was in campaign mode. But you saw the response that people had to him in Georgia because they were just so grateful for someone to show up.
See, he said something interesting, too. Here he is yesterday talking about FEMA. Cut 37.
FEMA has not done their job for the last 4 years. You know, I had FEMA working really well. We had hurricanes in Florida. We had Alabama tornadoes. Unless you have certain types of leadership, it gets in the way. And FEMA is going to be a whole big discussion very shortly because I'd rather see the states take care of their own problems.
Well, and you know what? I talked to Congressman Jared Moskowitz about this out of Florida. He was the emergency management director in Florida. He's a Democrat under DeSantis. They worked really well together. And there's been some talk about someone like Moskowitz maybe joining FEMA, maybe joining the Trump administration. He played a little coy with me, but he also had some really tough stuff to say about FEMA as a Democrat, where he thinks they're getting it wrong, and he would know. He's done this at the state level.
You know what? I think he, just knowing his personality, I think he'd have a hard time getting along with Trump because he's going to have to hold his fire and actually support him. I mean, I don't know.
Well, the common thread
how bad he was with Comer? How sarcastic he was?
Yeah. But I will say the common thread between the two is Susie Wiles. So if anyone could negotiate relationship, he knows her from Florida, too, and having worked there under DeSantis, they have a relationship.
So where the drama is really going to kick in and where the help is needed most is California. Mm-hmm. President's going to be there in probably 6 or 7 hours, at which time he says, I have no plans of meeting with Gavin Newsom, but he plans on meeting with Trump. He's going to be on the tarmac.
He's
going to
be on
the
tarmac.
So he said he's got to make some changes. So your prediction, Shannon Bream, do you think it'll be fireworky?
Well, listen, these two are frenemies at best. They have worked together on important things, and this is a very important thing. But I think that Trump has all the leverage here. Capitol Hill has all the leverage here to say, yes, we're going to do additional aid, but you've got to manage your forests better. You've got to do things differently. Now, President Trump is saying if they don't change the way that they channel water into the system, and Gavin Newsom is saying he's saying all kinds of things that are not accurate or not true about how we're managing it here. But Trump says, absent that, I really don't have a need to have a conversation with him. I think that they'll rise above and the two of them will get together on this and have some important conversations.
So there's some stories coming out on Politico today that Democrats are teaming with Republicans on the argument about getting these tending to the forests.
Right.
And getting this under control. You can't stop a wildfire. I got it. But you can be prepared to handle it. Number one, I'm used to thinking water would be effective. And it's not okay to have a reservoir not working or a backup generator not effective. Nicole Shanahan was on with Jesse last night and talked about she's out in California for the short-term running mate of RFK.
Mm-hmm.
Cut 39.
His term's up. He's reached his term limits. He's trying to go out on top. It's not looking good. His state is on fire, and the people of this state are calling out his mismanagement, egregious negligence in some cases. We have people running up to him and saying, I've been trying to clear this brush in these parklands behind my house, and no one's coming out to do it.
I mean, yeah. Is he right?
Well, and what struck me is I think she also said that they were told the money's not there. Well, how much money do you need to try to rebuild entire sections of Los Angeles? I mean, you've got to make good decisions, and that as the chief executive of a state, they're tough, and that's hard, and that's what you have to do. Their finances are not in great shape in California. So, you know, when you do cuts, whether it's, you know, done at the county or city level with your fire department, whether it's deciding how at a state level you manage your force, I mean, all of that has an impact. And, you know, I understand people on the Hill saying we don't want to send more money if you're not going to agree to do things that are more preventative in nature.
I mean, have you ever seen anything like this in your life of the executive branch? So he's going to handle the crises that was there before he got here. Before that, he's pumping out executive orders and now at the same time trying to work out a hostage deal. Four more out this weekend. Mm-hmm. I hope an American's amongst them. And I hope all four are alive. Evidently, not all four are, in exchange for about 80 mm-hmm. prisoners, many of which are doing life sentences for killing people. And then at the same time, he's now really pushing to get Russia to the table. And he's saying Russia's ready for an equal. And the Russia's response to Trump saying, come to the table. Russia's ready for an equal and careful dialogue with the United States, which we had during Trump's first term. We are waiting for signals have not yet been received. So Russia's lost 700,000, 800,000 mm-hmm. people, not all dead, some just casualties, and Ukraine roughly 500,000. So we'll see what happens, because Trump is not, as many people feared, doing the J.D. Vance candidate thing and saying, Ukraine is not my problem.
Right.
He understands Ukraine is a problem.
He does. And there's this whole issue of whether they would be allowed into NATO, which was, you know, Putin's big issue with them and why he said that he had to go there and defend the sovereignty and all this kind of stuff. But I think that, you know, Trump has tried to open the door and say, listen, we got to talk about this. No more goofing around. It would not have happened on my watch in the first place. But we will make you pay economically and other ways that we can stick it to you, Mr. Putin, if you do not hurry up and get to the table. So
General Jack Keane and Mark Thiessen had that column yesterday, talked mm-hmm. about how Russia has $300 billion of frozen funds, $200 billion of which is in a Belgian bank, and they're making interest on it. He said, wait a second. We put $183 billion into Ukraine, many of which is our weapons that we give them our weapons and then we make new ones. So
yeah, but we're way behind on that. Just about everybody in Washington would tell you we are so decimated on specific weapons and ammo and that kind of stuff, because we're spread so thin that if something happens with Taiwan, we're not really going to be in a position to arm them the way that we should.
Which makes you think that China's saying, this is a great idea.
Right.
The longer we keep America pinned down there. But he wants to get to the bottom of it. And what General Keane said, and that what Mark Thiessen backs up, and they said they've talked to President Trump about it, is that you take those frozen funds and you give it to Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And you let them buy the weapons from us with their money. And if they need some loans, and that's fine, what you do is they have all this natural resources and rare earth. You can actually trade off that to get a loan, mm-hmm. where we can gradually got paid back. And they use this as a template, 1990. Mm-hmm. George H.W. Bush says we set up an account where these countries can pay us back for knocking Saddam back and out of Kuwait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was, there was a lot of that conversation, you know, during the campaign. There were attempts on Capitol Hill to do those things, to go after those frozen assets. Didn't get very far because there was real worry about how that would play in the international community and the repercussions of that. But I do think that President Trump is open to some of these more creative things, the loans and that kind of stuff. But all the warnings that he was just going to, you know, cut every string to Ukraine and let them just fall apart. So far, that's not the case.
All right. We're going to come back with Shannon Bream. She's going to tell us who's coming, what's happening on Fox News Sunday. Also, President Trump just spoke after landing in North Carolina. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We'll bring some of that back.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Mr. President, a U.S. judge temporarily blocks the birthright citizenship order. Do you have any reaction?
No, obviously we'll appeal it. They put it before a certain judge in Seattle, I guess, right? And there's no surprises with that judge.
So that is the President of the United States reacting calmly to the fact that he put an executive order to revoke birthright citizenship, because how it's being used now, his contention is, it was not the way it was intended, the 14th Amendment. And that was because after the slaves were freed, many people weren't considering them citizens. They came right back with the 14th Amendment. And they said, if you're born here, you are an American citizen. And the case closed. And it wasn't for, hey, you're from Tajikistan. I'm here illegally. Let me have a little Tajik kid. And that kid becomes an American. What do you think of my analogy, Shannon? Am I ready for law school?
I think that you could be the next nominee to the Supreme Court. Listen, next time there's an opening, I want to see Brian Kilmeade's name at the top of the list.
And you'd cover it. I'd give you the exclusive.
I would. You better give me the exclusive. And I can't wait to cover your confirmation hearings, because I feel like there's a lot of dirt.
A lot of Tajikistan
talk. Yeah, we're going to bring that up.
I'm going to come out with my dirt right away, and I'm just going to defang everything.
Will you have notes, or like Justice Coney Barrett, no notes?
She has no notes.
Remember, she had a blank page and they were like, what's on your thing? And she held it up and it was like nothing. And yet she's like schooling everybody on the Constitution and stuff. That's going to be you.
That's good. Very similar. But so what do you think? Is it a surprise, a Seattle judge? Wasn't it a Reagan appointee or no?
It was a Reagan appointee. But, you know, the Ninth Circuit, which covers most of the Western United States, tends to be the most liberal group of judges. And listen, there are multiple lawsuits on this birthright citizenship across the country. But, you know, of course you would file in Seattle, just like conservatives, whenever they want to fight something from the Biden administration, they filed in Texas. Just how it works. But it's got to work its way through the process.
Oh, okay. So the protest was, okay, we're going to file in Seattle. So, okay, there you go. So what's next?
So it'll be on appeal. But again, we had these other ones. I think one was filed up in New England somewhere. There are several of them. And we'll just watch them proceed. But, you know, they could go to the Supreme Court rather quickly. What I suspect is the Supreme Court will not want to get involved until there's some substantive decisions in some of the lower courts. Like, okay, an injunction is one thing. But if they're going to decide something on the merits, I think they're going to want to let it ruminate a little bit.
So is the goal to get America to start talking about it? Because don't we need an amendment process to, or for, when you have an amendment that some people feel is being misinterpreted, I don't know the answer to this, it's being misinterpreted. What do? You force a definition through court filings.
Yeah. And
that's what he's doing.
If it gets to, yes, they knew this would immediately go to court. So you get you issue it on day one, day two. So you get it going through the process and going through the court system. And listen, if the Supreme Court ultimately takes it up on the merits and makes a decision, we'll see what they have to say. My suspicion would be that they'll say, listen, this is an amendment. If you want to amend the Constitution, it's a really tough process, a heavy lift, but you got to go do it.
All right. So that'll be it. The other thing, idiotic thing that even I can pick out, was as Joe Biden's leaving, he said we have a 28th Amendment, equal rights. Equal rights is now the 28th Amendment, case closed. And everyone just laughed at this. It's a joke.
Well,
what left-wing staffer, 22-year-old, nose-ring, purple-haired staffer, put that out?
I think that there was some coordination, though, because almost immediately my inbox filled with Democratic senators saying, this is so exciting, it's official, the 28th Amendment now exists, not even acting as if it was a question. But you know this has to go through a number of places, and Congress had set deadlines on this getting done before 1979, 1982. It didn't get there. It didn't get done. Even the late Justice Ginsburg said, oh, yeah, we're going to kind of start over on this thing. You can't just suck it in the way that it is now, you know, especially since several states had repudiated their ratification of it. And it all comes down to this. Am I getting too wonky for you?
No.
I mean, as a future Supreme Court justice, I figure you know this stuff.
It's good, probably good for me.
Just a refresher in your prep for your confirmation hearings. But the National Archivist is the one that has to recognize this stuff. They issued, you know, a pronouncement back in December. So just weeks ago. No, this is not legit. It doesn't matter how you feel about this personally or the underlying policies. It violates all the political and legal framework. It's not legit.
Shannon, have you thought about your show on Sunday?
I have thought about it, and I've thought that I will have exclusively Senator Tom Cotton, now awesome. The chair of the Intel Committee. Tulsi Gabbard will talk about her. Her hearing is this next week. How's that going to go through his committee? And also your favorite subject, TikTok. He has broken with President Trump on this, so we will talk about that. We've got some legal eagles to get us through the birthright citizenship, too.
You know, if President Trump just wants to look at the news feed on Panama on TikTok,
yep.
That will, you just watch.
China's not going to be pro-USA.
You know, the Belt and Road Program went right through Panama. They bought all into it, including Huawei, which is their telecommunications provider, which is China-based. They have two Hong Kong companies controlling the ins and outs, both sides of the Panama Canal, okay? They put $1.4 trillion into Panama. When you think the U.S. is saying, hey, it's not right, we're being gouged, look at the news feed on TikTok. It'll be all pro-China, believe me. Mm-hmm. All anti-Israel, believe me. The president says, well, we have iPhones that are made in China. Well, that's an interesting thing to bring up. It has nothing to do with this. But we're doing the same mistake. Red Note, a China app, is going to start growing in popularity. We got to stop. We got to kill it in the crib.
Well, and that's the thing. The law says a social media outlet can't be owned by a foreign adversary. And just about everybody who voted for that bill understands China as a foreign adversary. So I'll be really interested to see what Senator Cotton says, because listen, to somebody who fought to get that bill passed, he's going to have some opinions on what the president's doing now.
Have you thought about other guests?
I have. We're about to lock in a Democrat senator because they think they're realizing they're going to be stuck in D.C., which makes them even easier to book. And one other member of the incoming administration, now the official administration, I wish I could tell you right now, but we do have a name. I'm just waiting for the thumbs up from
the
White House.
Is it going to be a confirmed member of Donald
Trump's
cabinet?
It will not be a newly confirmed cabinet member, but it will be somebody who's very active in what the president's trying to get done.
And we do know this. We are getting some confirmation. We're going to get some hearings. We should get confirmations. We should have a Treasury Secretary this weekend. We should have a Defense Secretary this weekend. And we should possibly have a Transportation Secretary this weekend. And the reason why they're working this weekend, because Kristi Noem, Homeland Security, is up next.
Everybody's working for the weekend.
And why is that, Shannon? Because Chuck Schumer says if it's a controversial pick, we're going to just wait.
Well, and they're doing things like reading poems on the floor of the Senate. So it's like, if you have real objections, good. Let's hear them get up there and argue. Don't read poems. That's right. Wasting the American people's time.
So I'm going to have on One Nation, thanks for asking,
Saturday night,
Stephen Miller, Pierce Morgan. We're going to have Devin Nunes. And we're going to have Chris Rufo, as well as Charlie Arnold, to talk about what's happening in the media.
And a preview of your confirmation hearings.
My confirmation hearings, because eventually I'm going to be on?
Yeah.
The Supreme
in the
Court.
Hot seat.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Democrats have spent years saying, you're wrong not to care about this. You're wrong not to be bothered by these assaults on our democracy. You're wrong not to care about this stuff. And I think at a time when there's so much noise, we have to go to people and talk about what they already care about.
They think what's going to happen is they're going to go on Joe Rogan, and then Joe Rogan's going to say something about trans issues, and they're going to say, trans issues, that's just a distraction from high prices. And have you heard about what we did with Medicare? And Joe Rogan's going to be like, what? Mm-hmm. Because like they talk like a message document, mm-hmm. and they talk like their pollster told them to talk.
So that is part of Pod Save America. And these are two Obamaites who have a podcast that Democrats looked at as almost a standard bearer to find out what everybody was thinking, and they're free from running for political office. So they were, I would be very honest. And, you know, they're very critical of Joe Biden. Obviously, I think the story needs to be written. He was considered a joke with the Obama White House. I think Obama regretted picking him. He thought he was a different guy. Thought he'd give him some gravitas that he needed, because I think he was 42 when he was elected. And now you find out the people on the inside thought he was a joke. never really respected him, and he was an absolutely awful president. And the way he got out and the way his family protected him and to make him impossible to dislodge, and you have every right, you got what you deserved when you just basically placed him as the nominee and told him you can't have Bernie Sanders, we're going to select Joe Biden. You got what you deserved. And then you didn't have a primary. You got what you deserved. You got a terrible vice president. You got what you deserved because you said it had to be a woman and a woman of color that would be eligible to run. It knocked it down to three choices. Val Demings, Karen Bass. You see that abomination as mayor of Los Angeles. And Kamala Harris, who was thought as a talented person until they saw her try to campaign. Julian Epstein joins us now. He served as chief counsel to the House Judiciary Committee, staff director of the House Oversight Committee from 96 to 2001. And you'll also read his columns. Julian, your thoughts about where the Democrats go from here as they try to figure out what happened.
Well, Brian, good morning, and thank you for having me. Look, I think there is a lot wrong point you made about they knew Biden would be a bad candidate. There was a joke in the Obama White House that Biden was like a lovable dog that would always pee on the carpet. You know, they knew he was sort of a train wreck waiting to happen. I think Democrats have, you know, a lot of different problems. One is they had a really bad substitute candidate in Kamala Harris. She was basically incompetent as a candidate. She couldn't answer simple questions on things she should have been able to. Given that she was in the midst of, or claimed to be in the midst of all these policy debates for 4 years, the Democrats are way too beholden to the groups on the far left. You can see that in the vote on Laken Riley. You can see that on the vote on biological men playing in women's sports. You see that on the reaction to immigration generally, the deportations. They cannot divorce themselves from the groups on the left. But I think more fundamentally, a big, huge substructure, a shadow party developed during the Obama years, we talked about this last time, that has supported all of these sort of neo-socialist positions, whether it is DEI or ESG in the corporate world, whether it is open borders, whether it is deep prosecution. This is not just the position of a few groups in D.C. This is a huge substructure that involves hundreds of thousands of people whose jobs depend on the continuation of these sort of more radical ideologies. And I think it's going to be very hard for the Democrats to force themselves from this.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, this is so obvious. Like, for example, there's this new bill that says if a baby's born, when it goes full term, that you keep the baby alive. It's an alive bill. Every Democrat voted against it. Wait a second. So if a baby goes full term and is alive, you're not obligated to keep the baby alive? Among the people there are some guy, an adult that was fished out of the garbage and survived and has lived a fantastic life. So you can't get people to vote on that. And then you have Laken Riley, which got 46 votes in the House and got a handful in the Senate. Of course, if you're an illegal immigrant committing a crime and a murder, you should be immediately deported immediately. Why is that hard? So to me, this is a chance to rehab and start finding your footing on some layup bills. But I want you to hear what James Carville said. Here's what he said about Joe Biden, the pardons that he did out the door and his insistence that he would have won had he been able to run. Cut 35.
This kind of petty back and forth, oh, I would have beat Trump. No one believes that at all. And then fighting with Joe Biden and Alexander Pelosi. I mean, just look, guy, you had a noble career. Your last act was terrible. Just get out of the way. The party's moving on. I mean, they're really moving on. And it's very sad but that's just where we are. And he created this himself. He has nobody to blame but himself.
But I think I think on some level, when they write the story, Julian, they're going to say that he was mentally impaired and he was not capable of understanding how bad it was. And his family did nothing except for want him to stay in power. So they're mad at Nancy Pelosi. They should be looking in the mirror.
No question. And I mean, look, you and I have spoken about this. We knew he was mentally incompetent during the Afghanistan withdrawal when he didn't know what the position of his generals were. I mean, we've known this. It's been documented by the Wall Street Journal that as early as 2021, that members of Congress were fully aware of this and that they had to shield him from unscripted public exposure. So this is a lie that the entire party was in on. It was very destructive to democracy. And, you know, I appreciate James Carville saying that now, but, you know, there were very few of us.
I know you were there
after the midterms.
He was not with you.
Biden should run.
You were the one. Yeah, you were the few that said change out even before June. Before June, you were saying that.
And the day I had that article in the Wall Street Journal, I said it, you know, right after the midterms, and I wrote the piece in the Wall Street Journal that he should run. And everyone came down on me like, a hail of bricks, saying how disloyal it was. You know, the day that piece came out in the Wall Street Journal, I actually had dinner with Carville and a number of others at a residence in Miami. And, you know, I couldn't get any of the Democrats to agree with me that he should that he should withdraw. So it's great for all these Democrats to be out there now saying after the fact how terrible it was. But the measure of leadership and the measure of courage is whether you can speak the truth when it's unpopular. And very few of the Democrats, I'm not, you know, identifying or isolating anyone in particular, but very few. And in particular, I put the responsibility on people like Obama, Pelosi, Schumer, Jeffries, and others. Very few of them, when the test of leadership was due, very few of them stood up to it. They were cowards, mm-hmm. And they were dishonest. And that's why I think the party is not going to break away from the extremism of the left. They don't have the courage to do what Bill Clinton did in 1992 on Sister Soldier. They need to do that across the board, and they need to divorce themselves from this substructure of left-wing ideology that is probably into the hundreds of thousands. It's funded at the federal and state level, not just by government vendors, but through the foundation community. This is a huge cultural substructure within the left and the Democratic Party that's going to be very, very difficult to separate themselves from.
Traditionally, I don't love the culture wars. You know, the whole thing, same-sex marriage, marriage between a man. I just feel like it's fruitless. And when you get into religion, it never pays off. But this, when it comes to women, men playing women's sports, this when it comes to how many genders and your pronouns and apologizing for America, I'm saying to myself, I'm out. And that's what the American people are out. Do you notice Marco Rubio did something? Get down with the BLM and the gay flags. Should be an American flag on embassies around the world. We're not going to finance. Parades in El Salvador that talk about tolerance for trans rights. We're going to focus on America first. And I think that we should put all those arguments. Democrats not even engage in them. Just say we're done with it. You win. And move on to issues. You realize how much better the country would have been had you had Andy Beshear and Shapiro competing for the nomination, and had either one of them won, they'd be center left as opposed to way left, where Kamala Harris would have brought us. People were panicked as a country. Not only did they want Trump to win, but they were so concerned about her winning.
I agree with everything that you just said. I think the whole thing with the, you know, the BLM and the pride flags at embassies, that's a grovel. It's a grovel to the far left in a way that is embarrassing for the country. And it is exactly the kind of mentality we saw in California with the wildfires, where you pay attention to ideology, left-wing ideology, and you're not able to get your job done. I think the public is not behind it. So I think, you know, have we hit peak woke? Right. Yes. I think the country has rejected it. I think their conservatives have won the culture wars. I just don't think the Democrats know that they've lost the culture wars. So, with Trump doing there's a very interesting thing that happened this week when Trump ended DEI, right, which I think he was right to do. I'm all for outreach to make sure that we have the best of every community competing on a level playing field so the cream rises to the top. But DEI has become a religion of race preferences and oppressor ideology that is very destructive to democracy. But the interesting thing, Brian, that happened this week was when Trump issued the executive orders, you heard very little protest on the left, on the Democratic
yep.
side. It's almost as if the Democrats are thanking Trump quietly for emancipating them from the oppressiveness and the unpopularity of DEI. There's very little coming from the left as a result of it, which I think is very interesting. And I wonder whether Democrats are silently cheering on Trump as he rolls back all of these radical cultural
policies. And also, keep your powder dry. He's right now, Tom Homan, is out there arresting criminals, gang members, who don't belong in this country, are now murdering, killing, and drug trafficking and child trafficking in this country. He's arrested, when I got up today, over 500 in various cities, some of which in sanctuary cities. If you're a Democrat, this is not the time to stand up and say, we want to stand up for the rights of the criminals from another country. So you're basically saying murderers have rights too. Keep that argument to a defense attorney somewhere down the line. Lastly, I want you to hear what Tommy Vietor said, former Obama staffer, I think speechwriter too, what he said in his podcast, or what he said to Jesse about the pardons and how it really hurt the party, because he preemptively pardoned people who were just on a committee and his family.
I think Joe Biden's decision to pardon his family sends a terrible message to the world. I think the presidential pardon power is far too expansive. I would love to see Congress come together and pass a constitutional amendment that says you cannot pardon yourself, you can't pardon your family, you can't pardon your staff.
So that's a Democrat. So so he went out the door alienating the few allies he had left with that.
I think that's right. And I think that's the almost universal view. What Tommy Vietor said was almost the universal view on the Democrats, although I would probably tell Tommy you need more than Congress for a constitutional amendment. It's got to go to the states as well. But look, I think it's more serious than he said, Brian. And I was on Evening Edit a couple nights ago on the Business Channel, and I was making this point, which is the pardon is suggestive of a cover-up because, you know, President Biden himself was implicated in the influence peddling scheme. There were incidents in 2015 and 2016 where the State Department was making it clear that Hunter Biden's efforts in Ukraine were very much interfering in U.S. policy. And at the time, Biden was dining with Hunter Biden's business associates. So what it has done is it has suggested, at least in my mind, the possibility that the pardon is a cover-up of influence peddling schemes in which President Biden himself is implicated. And it just gives oxygen to the Republican argument that this needs to be further investigated, both by Congress mm-hmm. and potentially by the Justice Department. So I think what Biden did with this is, in a typically buffoonish way, is he made it worse for himself, and he has given credibility to the argument that this deserves more investigation.
Julian Epstein, thanks so much. I look forward to your next column, your next interview. Julian Epstein, thank you.
Sunday in the New York Post.
All right, there you go. All right, I look forward to reading it. Quick announcement coming up on One Nation, Saturday night, 9 o'clock, expect to hear from Stephen Miller, the latest from the White House, the pickup of all these criminals, transnational criminals. We're going to have Piers Morgan from England. That'll be great. And we're going to have Devin Nunes traveling with the president. We believe we're meeting him out in California to talk about how they set themselves up for failure with the devastating fires, as well as Chris Rufo. So it's going to be great. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. That's Saturday at 9. Back in a moment.
The fastest growing talk show in America. You're with Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I don't know. I was told that Schiff was going to travel with us to California. I wasn't thrilled, to be honest with you. And I saw him last night on television. It looks like he got hit with a baseball bat or something. What happened to him? Something happened to him. It looked like he got hit. It looked like he got beat around. But I'll ask Caroline to find out what happened to him.
So, Caroline Leavitt. So that president of the United States is now in North Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina, giving a press conference, got off the plane, have a press conference. Now he's going to go out and see some of the rubble that is left from Helene, find out what North Carolina has to do, show some support, bring some attention. And then he's going to go out to California, meet with Gavin Newsom. And he doesn't want to meet with Newsom, but he's going to be there. You just heard him comment on Adam Schiff. Why would Adam Schiff get on a plane with President Trump? He spent the whole time trying to undermine him and try to impeach him twice and led the charge along the way, leaking the press to everyone from Don Jr. to him himself. So Adam Schiff, remember how he tried to intimidate Facebook, shadow banning, demanding certain posts being torn down? Please. Adam Schiff get on Air Force One. I don't know. Did he have a bruise on his face or something, Allison? Do you know?
I did not see to look like if he really got hit with a baseball bat or not. Or, you know, you have to go look to see what he looked like. Right. But clearly he didn't look good.
Right. And the president said when asked about Anthony Fauci just now, he said, why'd you take the security away from Anthony Fauci? He goes, look, when you work for government, you can't just have security forever. Those guys made a lot of money, so they can use some of that money that they made in government and go pay for their own security. I'll give them some good numbers. I love the fact that Melania is traveling with him, too. I think that is so cool because I think she's a huge asset, huge asset. And then also going through the storm, Trump, but also his family. Melania was treated like hellaciously. Every time she did things like decorate the White House, terrible job. Why is she wearing that? Where is she? Separate beds, separate bedrooms. What's going on? Why is she never there? It's not a real marriage. Why is she not on any covers? She's vilified. Then they mock her on the late night shows. So they did get some blowback on that. But Trump seemed so calm and so serene. That's going to be one of the themes this weekend. That, you know, it's the same Trump, same guy, better staff that likes him more, competent, so experienced. But he's already had three or four things not go his way. And he's reacted so calm. Musk comes out and trashes the people involved in the $500 billion AI energy plant that they're going to build mostly in Texas. Calm. Yeah, let those guys work it out. Altman and Musk hate each other's guts. Let them work. Oh, you're not going to pass my birthright citizenship bill? It's okay. Well, just going to work it up the ladder. It's no big deal. It's the cool, calm, and collected Trump. I like it. Hey, go to BrianKilmeade.com. I want to meet you in person February 15th in Jacksonville, Florida, and March 22nd in St. Louis, Missouri.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Menendez Brothers, Victims or Villains?
Lyle and Eric Menendez were motivated by greed.
Others have called the brothers arrogant and spoiled.
The reason behind this was financial gain.
Or so it seemed.
These two brothers should be out of prison by now.
I don't see how the years of sexual, physical, and mental abuse amount to life without parole.
Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.